Welcome to Film Forum's podcast. The following event was recorded on December 2nd, 2015, live at our theaters located at 209 West Houston Street in Manhattan.
Welcome to Film Forum. My name is Mike Maggiore. I program the premieres with Film Forum director Karen Cooper. And it's my great honor to welcome you to the U.S. theatrical premiere of Kent Jones' Hitchcock Truffaut. Kent is, as many of you know, an incisive critic, a resourceful and dynamic film programmer, and a filmmaker with a deep passion for bringing cinema history alive. He co-wrote My Voyage to Italy, Martin Scorsese's ode to Italian cinema. He wrote and directed Val Lewton, Man in the Shadows. And with Scorsese, he co-wrote and co-directed A Letter to Elia about Elia Kazan, which won a Peabody Award. With Hitchcock Truffaut, Kent brings Francois Truffaut and Alfred Hitchcock's week-long 1962 conversation to thrilling life and enlists a stellar group of contemporary directors who expound on all of the ways that Hitchcock's brilliance has informed their own filmmaking. And I think Kent also brings a creative use of scenes from many Hitchcock classics, but the scenes that you may not have remembered as standing out and really sheds light on sequences that have been kind of underrated in Hitchcock's career. We've known Kent for many years. I was once a neighbor of his in Brooklyn. And he's been a great friend to Film Forum over the years. In 1996, he co-programmed a wildly successful film series called Out of the 70s, Hollywood's New Wave, 1969 to 1975. And in addition to all the Q&As he's doing for this film over the next few days, on Sunday, he's going to be hosting a conversation on stage with the actress and filmmaker and author, Ileana Douglas. That's Sunday at 2:30. Now, please join me in welcoming Kent Jones.
I really have to say that it means a lot to me that this film is playing here at Film Forum. Yes, Mike and I have known each other for a very long time. Karen and I have known each other for a very long time. Bruce Goldstein is a very close friend. And, I work uptown at Lincoln Center. But I find that I've spent, well over half of my adult life down here watching movies. And it's a real, it's very moving for me. So thank you. That's a hand for Film Forum, and that's good. I guess I just want to say that this movie is a conversation about filmmaking by filmmakers. That's what the conversation is between the two of them. That's, and of course, the reason that the conversation happened was the book. I wanted to make a movie for people who knew the book and who doesn't necessarily know the book, to orient people, who don't have the knowledge, but to speak to everyone, but really to speak about filmmaking as such. I think too often when people talk about cinema, they tend to frame it in terms of the issues that film promotes as if it were something less than the message that it's supposed to convey. I don't happen to agree with that viewpoint, and this movie is an expression of the deep love for cinema by filmmakers and how they practice it. I really thank you all for coming. It's great to be here, and Mike and I will be back after the show to do some questions and answers, and thank you.
Once again, the director of Hitchcock Truffaut, Kent Jones. So, Kent, when did you first read this book?
When I was 12.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I bought it or somebody gave it to me. I honestly don't remember anymore.
Yeah.
But my experience of it was like what Fincher says, I just poured over it, just looking again and again.
Yeah.
Well, the stills in certain passages.
Yeah. And this seems to me like a wildly ambitious idea to make a documentary based on this book and all of the films of Alfred Hitchcock up until that point. How did you decide on the structure of the film. What did you, I know you said in your intro you wanted it to be just filmmakers talking about it, but can you share with us, you know, really your plan?
I didn't want to do a linear history, so I didn't want to build the structure, let's say, you know, according to some historical idea. I wanted to kind of figure out where the energy was in their talks with each other. And what I mean by that is that's a stand-in for something more complicated, which is, you know, but is there an exchange that's kind of immediate that can be felt in words that can be used on the screen as opposed to something that's a very long kind of technical explanation? Is there an exchange in their tones of voice? And then are they saying something? What are they saying? And what's their attachment to what they're saying? When he's talking about stuff like the MacGuffin, I don't find that interesting. To me, that's a part of the act. Same as actors are cattle, even though he says it in the movie and it's funny, but it's just like, obviously that's just, you can't work with Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman and Notorious and treat them like cattle. It just doesn't work.
And those are things that have been covered so extensively in other treatments of Hitchcock. Did you?
Yes. I think that stuff has all been covered extensively and by him. I mean, you know, it's in most of the interviews with him, that are on TV or that were for official, you know, use, which this was not, of course. This was recorded to be turned into a book, so that's different. But in most of the interviews, he's got his public persona on. This is kind of different from that.
Yeah, it seems much more candid.
Yeah.
And explicit. I mean, were there things that, I know that you, I've read that you went through all of the audio tapes.
Sure.
And there must have been a lot of material that didn't make its way into the book.
There's a lunch. There's a lot of, yeah, there's tons of stuff. I mean, there's a fascinating exchange on rope, for instance. I mean, we had a section on rope in the movie. But the thing is that, you know, you have to make the movie. So it's got to be concise and it's got to work and be dynamic and the rhythm has to be right. And so, you know.
Right. I thought that there were some things in the discussion of Vertigo that I was hearing that was not in the book. Is that right?
Yeah. And don't ask me what the story is, because he turned the tape recorder off.
Right.
People ask, I've been at screenings where people say, what happened in the story? Well, he turned the tape recorder off. I wasn't there. I don't really want to think about Jimmy Stewart getting an erection, but, you know.
Well, you said it.
Yeah, I did.
You have so many great directors on camera. Were there any directors you wanted to get but couldn't, for whatever reason, they couldn't do it?
I obviously asked Brian De Palma. I mean, you know, of course I asked Brian De Palma. And Brian had an excellent reason for not doing it. He was very polite about it. And he said, I just have to save my thoughts about Hitchcock for Noah Baumbach and Jake Paltrow's movie About Me, which we showed in the New York Film Festival this year. And I think that was an extremely good reason, because I think it's a great movie.
It's a terrific film.
As a matter of fact, it opens with a clip from Vertigo.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Hitchcock, he's completely, you know, he's very, very eloquent about his thoughts on. But also, there were other people. You know, some people have asked me why there are no women in the film. The reason that there are no women in the film, because there are three women filmmakers who I went to, whose work I respect very much, one of whom said, I'm sorry, I just don't have anything to say about Alfred Hitchcock. Another one said, I'm very shy about appearing on camera, and the other one was in pre-production, and so it wasn't working. Unfortunately, there's not an enormous number of women filmmakers. That's the, you know, of course, problem, but yeah, anyway.
And then I'm going to ask one more question and then we can go to the audience, but didn't they meet again later in the 60s to talk about other films?
Oh, God.
Other
films. Oh, yeah, they did.
Torn
they
Curtain.
Met, yes, that's right. They met to talk about Marnie and they met to talk about Torn Curtain. Mm-hmm. One thing that's kind of interesting is that, you know, the movie starts with this, what becomes the murder sequence from Sabotage, and then we show her stabbing, Sylvia Sidney stabbing Oscar Homolka. And in the book, there's a very, very lengthy, detailed discussion of that scene. And Hitchcock goes on and on about, you know, and the knife is like a magnet, et cetera. And much to my surprise, it's nowhere in the tapes.
Really?
So I kind of wonder about that. It's hard for me to imagine that they talked about it when they went back to talk about Marnie and Torn Curtain. They might have, but I don't think so. So that's interesting. It's maybe I don't know.
Well, we can take questions from the audience. If you have one, just raise your hand and we'll pass the mic around. Don't all ask questions at once. I have more, but I want to give the audience an opportunity. We've got one in the back, in the center. Hi. You can just wait a moment. We're going to give you a mic.
It's on its way. Yay, it's great. Okay.
Hello. Oh, my God. I really enjoyed your film. Good. What did you find the most this entirely, and what did you find also the most difficult?
Well, it was interesting trying to, you know, I wanted to make a movie. I was really into the idea of making a movie based on audio tapes, because that's a great challenge, right? You know? And what I didn't want to do was to, unfortunately, you know, there's an idea now that's common in fiction films and documentary films that the audience can't stand to have their eye at rest for more than, you know, I don't know what the interval of time would be. You know, you could measure it in Planck lengths, not even seconds, you know. So did people just, you know, it's just against the law to, you know, risk, I don't know what, you know. So you wind up seeing a lot of things like artificially distressed footage, you know, that supposedly looks like it was shot during an earlier period, and people in period clothes and the backs of their heads and, you know, lens flares and stuff. You also see tricky things happening with photographs. You see a lot of animation. And that's something, all that stuff I just didn't want to do, because of course the reality is that if you're working with images from Alfred Hitchcock's films, they're going to overpower anything else that you're going to do visually. So what I wanted to do, you know, the challenge and the idea is to make it about the binding of the ideas and the images and the way that things talk back and forth to each other, and to keep the tension alive. So it's not that it was difficult, it's that it was a good difficulty. I mean, it was difficult, yes, I guess, but then it's difficult in the way that all movies are difficult. It was fun and it was challenging. What was interesting was seeing how one could, for me, feel the presence of the people, and by that I mean those two guys and all of the other directors, come alive as people, as opposed to just sort of like interview subjects, which is not what I wanted. I just wanted them all to be a chorus of, you know, voices talking to each other and, you know, creating something out of that chorus. It's nice that a couple people have said, I really love the footage of Hitchcock and Truffaut that you have in your movie. When was it shot? And I was like, well, there isn't any, but that's very nice that you'd think that, you know? Seriously. I mean, you know, that's a good thing. So anyway, I hope that is some kind of an answer.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
There's another question down the middle. If you can just hold on a moment. Right there. Just keep your hand up. Yep. Thanks.
excuse me. It's mentioned in the film how Truffaut's films, obviously, and his style were very different from Alfred Hitchcock's. So I guess two questions. One, how much do we know about what Hitchcock thought of Truffaut's work? Obviously, in the letters, he's praising his work. And then the second thing is why it seems like Truffaut wasn't really, even though he loved Hitchcock, he really wasn't influenced by him as a filmmaker. Or at least it wouldn't appear that he was that strongly influenced by his style.
I think that influence is a much, much, much trickier, more mysterious question than it appears to be. I think that for instance, the influence, the example of Brian De Palma is very misleading, because he's alone. He's sui generis. In other words, he's someone who actually looked at Hitchcock's work, saw it as sort of like a world unto itself, and built his own. It's like a, you know, it's a star that revolves around it. You know, it's around Hitchcock's work, and he would say probably as much himself. But that's unusual, very unusual. There are other cases of like Hal Hartley, for instance, and his relationship to Brezon, Godard, Darjeon, and Rabaev, and his relationship to Bresson's films, but really they're pretty distinct. And I think that when you get into the question of influence, I mean, you know, for instance, Proust was a great admirer of Dostoevsky. Would you be able to, you know, tell from reading his novels? Of course not. But, you know, did he have an influence on him? Probably, because he admired him, and Dostoevsky's such a powerful writer. But the point is that you filter, you know, you absorb it, and it's filtered through and comes out in mysterious ways that even you can't, you know, that no one can talk about. So I think that, you know, we're primed to speak in that way based on that era when people were looking back at film, you know, starting with the New Wave, and when they were, you know, very consciously citing earlier films. You know, comes up a lot in Godard, and it comes up a lot in Truffaut in certain movies. But Truffaut had his own orientation, and, you know, he was also perhaps even more, I think he probably admired Jean Renoir even more than Hitchcock. But I don't feel like his movies are that close to Jean Renoir's films either, you know. So I think that the movies where he did kind of go in a semi-Hitchcockian direction, you could say, you know, The Bride Wore Black is the obvious one, and Confidentially Yours, and even those, I don't really feel, they don't, Bride Wore Black doesn't really feel like Hitchcock to me. Sometimes in the cutting patterns and something like Fahrenheit 451, I can feel it very clearly, but that's because, you know, Hitchcock is so powerful, he's there in everybody's movies. And in that case, he's, you know, it's a director looking for solutions and thinking, what would Hitchcock do? He's not the first, and he's not the last.
More questions? Yes, in the blue shirt.
Hi, I enjoyed the movie very much. I was wondering how you got this made. Like, did you have to pitch this idea to someone? And if so, how do you pitch a movie about a book?
Yeah, you know, I was actually, somebody asked me. So I lucked out there. There was a pre-existing project. At the end of the film, it says this film is dedicated to Gail Levin. She was a filmmaker who was going to make a movie based on the tapes. It was going to be a very different kind of movie, but it was going to be a movie based on the tapes. And Gail passed away. And a few years later, Charles Cohen, who's one of the producers of the film, called me and asked me if I was interested. And I was like, fuck yeah. You know, I mean, but when I said, you know, here's what I want to do, you know, I was prepared for the producers to say, well, you know, okay, but how about, you know, some interviews with Tippi Hedren and Kim Novak. I don't know, you know, something. I mean, you know, to spice it up. But they went along with it. They were into the idea, and that was great. So, you know, I had a lot of support on both sides of the Atlantic. It's an international co-production, and an international co-production. It's a co-production, and there's a French company and an American company, and they were all great.
We have time for just one or two more questions. Yes, right there.
Hi. You know, I think it's kind of a bitter pill to swallow for a lot of Hitchcock fans that he was such a caricature and made such wonderful work, but maybe died a little disappointed or a little doubtful of, you know, maybe what he did. I thought it was important and interesting that you chose to include that. And I was just wondering what made you decide to include that and how it affected the things you chose to put into the film.
Because I think that that's the nature of the exchange. In other words, you know, this young director goes to New York and somebody says, you know, who are the filmmakers that you admire? And he says, well, of course, Alfred Hitchcock. You're kidding. You know, so he, you know, Helen Scott said he literally spent an hour and a half lecturing some guy. You know, I don't remember who it was, but I think Daniel Abadie was his name, you know, a journalist. And he said, here are the films you have to see, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And then said to Helen Scott, we have to do this book. And so, you know, he wrote Hitchcock that letter, and Hitchcock's response kind of says it all. Your letter brought tears to my eyes. You know, I mean, So the nature of the exchange to me, and the reason I framed the movie with him asking a question, you know, he's essentially saying, you know, I know that you like my work, but was it really good enough? You know, I mean, essentially that's the nature of their exchange to me as I hear it throughout. Was I, you know, what is it that, you know, I think that my films are really special. What is it that makes my, make my film special? You know, I think that they are, but I want you to tell me why, you know, and I want to know whether I should have done something else that maybe was a little bit more unusual on a narrative level. And essentially Truffaut is just consistently answering him and saying, no, it's not only good enough, it's, you've inspired me, all the people that I know, and you're foundational to the art form. So it's okay. I didn't mean to, you know, I certainly don't want to imply that he's a human being. I mean, you know, he had doubts, sure. You know, I mean, we all do. And so, you know, I think he just kind of, in that telegram, which is very poignant, you know, he entertained, you know, expressed those doubts and shared them with Truffaut. But I think that the book is an act of affirmation, and it's particularly important that it comes from another director, you know.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for, but so, thanks so much for coming,
thanks,
Ken.
Man.
It's a wonderful film.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Film Forum's podcast. Visit us online at filmforum.org, where you can learn more about our films, memberships, subscribe to our free weekly e-newsletter, and to find out the ways you can support our nonprofit cinema. And if you have the time, please visit our iTunes page and leave a rating and review of our podcasts. Copyright to this program belongs to The Moving Image Incorporated.